Edgar Casey first came to public attention because of his seemingly inexplicable ability to enter into a trance-like state and diagnose illnesses and prescribe cures, very often for people he'd never even seen, let alone examined. By 1923, he'd been giving these psychic readings for over 20 years. However, in all of that time, he'd never once mentioned astrology. In 1923, a man by the name of Arthur Lammers came to Casey and asked for a different kind of reading. He wanted information on his astrological horoscope. Well, Casey made no promises, but agreed to enter his trance state and allow Lammers to ask whatever questions he liked. When that reading was finished, Casey awoke to discover that he'd given Lammers a description of his mental and spiritual character by making references not only to astrological terminology, but also by going into specific detail about the influences of previous lives that Mr. Lammers had lived on Earth, and the effects of the time between incarnations spent dwelling in non-earthly planes or dimensions. This was astounding, not only because of the unique perspective Casey gave to astrology, but also for the very fact that he mentioned it at all. In waking life, Edgar Casey was a devoted Christian. He was a professional photographer who loved to teach Sunday school. He had no background in astrology, philosophy, or ancient history, other than his study of the Bible. Although he had, over the years, come to accept and trust his gift of psychic healing, what was he to make of this new kind of information? In a reading given just after the one for Lammers, the question was asked, quote, "Is it proper for us to study the effects of the planets on our lives in order to better understand our tendencies and inclinations as influenced by the planets?" Unquote. The answer came through from the trance state. Quote, "When studied aright, very, very, very much so. How aright then? In that influence as is seen in the influence of the knowledge already obtained by mortal man. Give more of that into the lives, giving the understanding that the will must be the ever-guiding factor to lead man on, ever upward." Unquote. Question, quote, "In what way should astrology be used to help man live better in the present physical plane?" Answer, quote, "In that which the position of the planets give the tendencies in a given life, without reference to the will." Unquote. These excerpts are from the first two of a new kind of Casey reading that became known as life readings. From 1923 until his death in 1945, Edgar Casey gave nearly 2,000 life readings. Unlike his psychic diagnoses, these readings addressed the larger questions of life. Questions like, who am I? What is my purpose in life? And how do I fulfill my destiny? Almost all of them refer to the astrological or planetary influences and the effect of previous lives. Now, even though Edgar Casey was personally able to come to terms with what would seem a conflict with his traditional Christian beliefs, why should you give any credence to such a suspect pseudoscience as astrology? After all, hardly anyone pours a libation of wine on the altar of Zeus anymore, and astrology is completely wrapped up in the Greco-Roman gods and mythologies. If you don't believe that a pantheon of gods controls the affairs of humankind, why should you believe that their planetary namesakes have any influence over your life? From the perspective of this tape, the answer is twofold. First, you need to understand the power of symbols. Psychiatrist Carl Jung identified these as cross-cultural archetypes coming from the universal unconscious, which we'll deal with a little later in this tape. But by far, the most persuasive argument for seriously considering astrology as it is used in the Edgar Casey readings is very simply the source itself. Edgar Casey didn't read a few books on astrology and then one day start doing people's horoscopes. Casey entered into a trance-like state. And while in that state, he was able to draw upon a vast source of information called the Akashic Record. He was not making up the best answer he could. He was being a conduit, a channel, providing information that was appropriate to the questions posed. his source of information, this Akashic record, that made use of astrological terminology, was exactly the same source that for 20 years had been providing Casey with psychic diagnoses that had astounded medical science. Edgar Casey was able to go into a trance state and correctly diagnose illnesses for people. He needed no more information than the person's name and his or her location at the time the reading was given. Not only that, but he prescribed cures and remedies, sometimes with quite unorthodox ingredients. Many people were completely cured of diseases which conventional medicine considered to be incurable, and he did this on literally thousands of occasions. If the same source that gave Edgar Casey the information for his correct psychic diagnoses also gave him astrological information, it's no wonder that Edgar Casey and those close to him came to accept what the readings had to say about astrology. For the same reasons, you should give serious consideration to the amazing revelations that came through the life readings. The Akasha, or soul record, is a body of information written across time and space that contains an account of each individual soul's evolutionary progress. Humanity's relationship to our solar system is part of a great plan of soul development. It calls for the individual soul entity to evolve spiritually through successive lives on Earth and in non-earthly planes of consciousness. The record of each soul's development is preserved on the Akasha, which is a Sanskrit word meaning space. Edgar Casey was able to scan these records to provide the information he gave through his readings. The following is a transcription of a dream experience that Edgar Casey had during a reading that explained how he was able to tap into the Akashic record. Quote, "I see myself as a tiny dot out of my physical body, which lies inert before me. I find myself oppressed by darkness, and there is a feeling of terrific loneliness. Suddenly, I am conscious of a white beam of light. As this tiny dot, I move upward following the light, knowing that I must follow it or be lost. As I move along this path of light, I gradually become conscious of various levels upon which there is movement. Upon the first levels, there are vague, horrible shapes, grotesque forms such as one sees in nightmares. Passing on, there begin to appear on either side misshapen forms of human beings with some part of the body magnified. Again, there is change, and I become conscious of gray hooded forms moving downward. Gradually, these become lighter in color. Then the direction changes, and these forms move upward, and the color of the robes grows rapidly lighter. Next, there begin to appear on either side vague outlines of houses, walls, trees, etc. But everything is motionless. As I pass on, there is more light and movement in what appear to be normal cities and towns. With the growth of movement, I become conscious of sounds, at first indistinct rumblings, then music, laughter, and singing of birds. There is more and more light. The colors become very beautiful, and there is the sound of wonderful music. The houses are left behind. Ahead, there is only a blending of sound and color. Quite suddenly, I come upon a hall of records. It is a hall without walls, without a ceiling, but I am conscious of seeing an old man who hands me a large book, a record of the individual for whom I seek information." Unquote. Did the information that Casey received from the Akasha actually corroborate the mythologically based astrology? In part, yes. However, in some ways, it is very different from conventional astrological theory, even revolutionary, which brings us back to something mentioned earlier, the importance of symbols. The ancients of Mesopotamia, Egypt, and Persia observed that the sun, moon, and the five visible planets moved along a predictable course, according to established laws. To them, these celestial movements became associated with the shifts and changes in human experience. They concluded that the laws which governed the movements of the heavenly spheres were the same laws that governed the thoughts and actions of human beings. By the time the ancient Greek civilization reached its zenith, The study of astrology had become formalized. Each planet was associated with a specific god, and both the god and its namesake planet became symbols for certain human characteristics. The ancient Greeks overlaid the entire night sky with portraits of their mythological characters. Those portraits have remained to this day, drawing together the visible stars into constellations with Greek names like Pegasus, Orion, Cassiopeia, and Andromeda. When the Greek civilization was conquered by the Roman Empire, the names for the Greek gods were changed so that Ares became Mars, Zeus became Jupiter, and so on. But the associations between the gods and the planets were kept intact. The astrological system that resulted has remained virtually unchanged to this day. And although no one today worships the ancient gods, the powers ascribed to the planets and constellations in modern astrology are the characteristics that were attributed to these ancient gods. These characteristics, or attributes, are what psychiatrist Carl Jung called archetypes. They are universal patterns that are present deep within each of us. These are the basic building blocks of human character that make an Australian bushman, an ancient Greek, or a New York banker all respond with the same sense of recognition to the same symbolic image. These archetypes that we share with all of humanity at the level of the collective unconscious are what became symbolized as mythical gods and then imprinted upon certain dominant stars in the heavens. Did the Casey readings confirm that the attributes which the ancients assigned to the planets are, in fact, correct? With regard to planets, most of the astrological interpretations found in the Casey readings follow traditional astrology. However, they often provide new insights and interesting twists on the traditional meaning of each planet. Does this mean that Casey confirmed the stars do control our destiny? That they have power to influence who and what we are? No. The Casey readings clearly and categorically deny the notion that the planets control our destiny. Rather, our destiny is shaped by our God-given power of free will. We choose our destiny by the choices we make day to day and moment by moment. So the planets are like signposts. They reflect our inner character by being in certain positions at the time of our birth. Then a soul chooses or is drawn to a particular moment of birth. The planetary positions of that moment symbolize the soul's attributes that are being brought into the upcoming lifetime. In the Casey view, the planets are somehow timed or synchronized to human experience. They don't make us a certain way. They just indicate or reflect the kind of person we are when we are born. As Edgar Casey said in one reading, quote, "The strongest force used in the destiny of man is the sun first. Then the closer planets to the earth, or those that are coming to ascension at the time of the birth of the individual. But let it be understood here, no action of any planet or the phases of the sun, the moon, or any of the heavenly bodies surpass the rule of man's willpower." Unquote. Casey also differs from traditional astrology in another sense. As already mentioned, Casey's interpretation of the planets is very similar to traditional astrology, and the role that the planets play in the soul's journey is very important, as you'll hear in a moment. But with regard to the stars and the constellations that make up the signs of the zodiac, Casey rarely mentioned them in the life readings, and when they are mentioned, they are of secondary importance to the planets. Edgar Casey said in one of his readings, quote, "As to those influences of the constellations or of the zodiacal signs in the life of this entity, these are merely the wavering influences in the life, and not those directing forces ever present in the inner soul of this entity. These we find in opposition to much that is at present taught or given in the earth plane." Unquote. Casey also rarely mentioned aspects as they are conventionally understood in astrological terms. The position of planets in relation to one another, such as conjunction, opposition, square, or trine, seem to be of lesser significance in the perspective of the Casey readings. It is the planets themselves, without any position indicated, that formed the backbone of Casey's astrological symbolism. And in the material from the readings, the planets are inexorably linked to past lives. Casey's astrology fits squarely within the framework of reincarnation. We journey through lifetime after lifetime, learning how to think and act as true children of the Creator. In other words, we're learning how to treat one another with love and compassion. This, in a nutshell, is the purpose of life. However, even though we have a common purpose, we are all individuals. We each are becoming a child of God who is unique. Just as no two snowflakes are the same, each soul is developing in its own particular way. Each soul is like a personal signature which is written through the eons of time. Our experiences and choices shape each of us into a distinctive character. Each soul's special quality is constructed from building blocks that are common to all humanity. Just as Beethoven and the Beatles both use the same musical scale and laws of harmony, but their respective forms of music came out quite differently. In the same way, two different souls are likely to create distinctive characters using the same essential building blocks. What are those basic building blocks? Well, we might call them temperaments or character traits. Virtually every psychology, philosophy, or religion has some way of describing these fundamental personality traits. Casey usually presented them through astrological symbolism. The eight planets that share our solar system clearly symbolize the fundamental building blocks of human nature. For example, Mercury describes intellectual abilities. Mars symbolizes assertiveness. Venus, the power of attraction, and so on. In addition, these planets represent actual dimensions of existence. Although while we're here in the material world, we experience them only as inner urges or temperaments. According to the readings, between earthly lives, we live in these other non-physical dimensions on these planets. In them, we absorb the lessons we received during the preceding earthly life. And from them, we return to Earth, equipped with certain abilities selected for the next life experience. The readings call these periods of rest and reflection interplanetary or astrological sojourns. Of course, these statements don't mean that scientists will one day find human beings living on the physical planet Mars. It means that there is a dimension of mind symbolized by the planet Mars, and it's one state of consciousness in which you might focus your soul's activities between earthly lives. For example, a person might develop strong intellectual abilities throughout his or her lifetime. After physical death, that person might move to a dimension of consciousness where those abilities could be absorbed by the soul. In a later lifetime, he or she might very well carry back this intellectual temperament. Casey would say of such a person that that individual came from the environment or dimension of Mercury. Another individual who was born with a highly assertive temperament would be described as entering the Earth from Mars. So, what do the positions of the planets at your birth indicate? They reflect the patterns of your soul. In other words, the microcosm of your personal temperament corresponds to the macrocosm of the solar system. The outer universe at the time of your birth reflects the condition of your inner universe. Therefore, a chart of the sky at the time of your birth can indeed provide you with clues to your inner character. All of the planets symbolize qualities that are necessary for your full spiritual development. There are no bad planets. Even Saturn, which symbolizes hardship and starting over, is a necessary part of human life. Your job is to harmonize and balance the different qualities. All of the planets represent attributes that can be expressed either in a positive or a destructive way. Just how you express the energies depends on your own choices. It's interesting to note here that a French researcher named Michel Gauquelin has inadvertently corroborated much of the basic Casey information on astrology. he originally set out to disprove astrology in general. However, after doing a statistical analysis of birth charts of over 1,000 outstanding physicians, he found that the doctors had, and I quote, chosen to come into the world much more often during roughly the 2 hours following the rise and culmination of two planets, Mars and Saturn. Moreover, they tended to avoid being born following the rise and culmination of the planet Jupiter, unquote. Further studies yielded striking correlations between Mars rising and sports figures or military leaders. Jupiter was prominent for politicians and actors, the Moon for writers, and Saturn for scientists. As a final comment on Gauquelin, just as Casey placed little emphasis on the signs of the zodiac, after a computer analysis of character traits and signs, he concluded that, from a statistical standpoint, quote, the signs of the zodiac are valueless, unquote. Now, what are we to do with this information in order to make it useful and helpful to us? How can we apply it in helping us to understand ourselves and effectively shape our future? In the Casey view, astrology best serves as a means of better understanding yourself, your strengths, your weaknesses. It can give you a kind of blueprint of your own soul's history. It can awaken you to your talents and thereby encourage you to develop them. It can warn you of possible frailties so you can work to strengthen them. The planets represent basic building blocks or dimensions of soul development. By studying them, you can get a picture of where you've been, who you are, and your best options for further growth. But how do you do this? How do you determine which planets are prominent in your character? To begin with, you might study the fundamentals of astrology and use them to examine your own horoscope. There are literally thousands of books that can instruct you with the basics of astrology. They'll summarize the meanings of planets, signs, houses, and aspects. They'll also help you to learn how to identify which planets seem dominant in your astrological profile. Through the centuries, astrologers have refined a system which uses the positions of the planets in outer space to determine which planets are most prominent in the inner space of your mind and soul. In his own readings, Casey was told that his soul entered from the dimension of, as he pronounced it, Uranus. If we look at his horoscope, we'll see that the planet Uranus was located squarely on the eastern horizon at the time he was born. Neptune was the other planet that Casey's reading identified as particularly influential in his life. That planet was almost directly overhead at his birth. And in one reading, Casey clearly stated that planets coming up in the east at the time of birth would likely be influential. The researcher Gauquelin found the very same pattern. He found that the planets either just rising or those nearly overhead correlated best with an individual's personality traits. Therefore, you might note if any planets are in those positions on your birth chart. You might also look for any planets that seem particularly involved. Are there any planets that form major aspects to one another? For example, you might note that Mars is in a conjunction with Venus. It is square to Jupiter, and Mars is opposite the Sun. This large number of aspects suggests a highly influential planet. Though the Casey readings did not place great emphasis on aspects, this is another way you might identify the planets which might be prominent in your character. When Edgar Casey was asked in readings about the accuracy of traditional astrological profiles, he made a few very important points. First, he credited the traditional system as being generally accurate. However, he continually stressed that the positions of the physical planets at the time of birth were merely reflecting the inner condition of the soul being born. The positions of the planets do not make a soul a certain way. They only indicate how that soul has chosen to develop throughout its long history of lifetimes. A second vital point to keep in mind is that astrological systems do not take into account your free will. You are not ruled by the stars. Whatever tendencies are indicated by your horoscope ultimately have no control over your ability to choose for yourself. Therefore, your life and personality may have little relation whatever to the portrait you find in your horoscope if you've worked hard to make yourself otherwise. This is important to remember, because it's tempting to give astrology more authority than it deserves. It's a helpful tool if kept in perspective. Your free will, more than anything else, determines your destiny. Once you've identified likely prominent planets through studying your horoscope, you might compare your findings with some honest self-examination. For example, if Mercury seems prominent, you can ask yourself, am I a person with a strong intellect who searches for logical answers? Or if Mars is a candidate, ask, do I like to take the initiative and seize command? If so, then you are clearly developed in these dimensions. If not, maybe you're someone who's used your free will to develop in different ways. You might also ask yourself, to what degree am I expressing this or that planet in a positive way? Remember, the planets are basic energies which you can use either positively or negatively. Honest self-examination can help you identify how you're using these energies, as well as which ones are prominent. Finally, you can contemplate how the different planets are harmonizing in your personality. How well do they work together? Do some planets seem to reinforce each other? Are some in conflict? In this way, astrology can become a very detailed description of your strengths and weaknesses. The better you know yourself, the more power you have to shape your own destiny. Traditional astrology uses three overlapping systems for describing the position of any planet. One system is called signs. The sun, moon, and planets all travel along the same path through the sky. The fixed stars that form the background of this path have been organized into constellations, just as all the rest of the stars have been. This particular band of constellations, which forms a neat circle around the Earth, is called the zodiac. The zodiac is made up of exactly 12 constellations, thus dividing this planetary path into 12 segments. At any moment, each planet is somewhere along this circular path. Therefore, you can always describe a planet's location by saying it's in the sign of Aries or the sign of Gemini or whatever sign it happens to be in. A second system for locating a planet is called houses. Because the Earth is spinning on its axis, the zodiac seems to make a full circle over your head every 24 hours. Therefore, the signs of the zodiac are in continual motion. The houses are also divisions of space around the Earth, but instead of moving like the signs, they are always fixed. In other words, the first house always begins at the eastern horizon, while the beginning of the 10th house is always directly overhead in the sky. There are 12 houses, just as there are 12 signs. So you can also locate a planet by saying it's in the 4th house or the 10th house, or whatever house, depending upon where the planet is. The third way you can locate a planet is by its proximity to other planets. If two or more planets are relatively close to each other, they're said to be in conjunction. If they're on opposite sides of the zodiac circle, they're said to be in opposition. These descriptions are called aspects, and there are about four or five that are considered significant or major aspects. Therefore, in analyzing your horoscope, an astrologer may say, quote, your Jupiter is conjuncting your Mars in the fourth house in Aquarius, unquote. Now, all three of these systems carry their own set of symbols. A traditional astrologer interprets your chart by integrating these different sets of symbols as they blend into one another. As mentioned earlier, the Casey readings occasionally refer to specific signs, houses, and aspects. But the planets themselves, without any position indicated, clearly form the backbone of Casey's astrological symbolism. Let's turn then to an examination of the eight planets to compare what mythology, astrology, and the Casey readings have to say about each of them. The planet closest to the sun is Mercury. Because it's the closest, it also moves the fastest in its orbit. From the days of ancient Greece, the planet has always represented the power and speed of thought. The ancient Greeks assigned the planet to the god Hermes, the cleverest of the Olympian gods and their chief messenger. He was depicted with wings on his sandals. His image is still used today by flower delivery companies who want to impress upon you their speed of service. The Romans changed the name of the god and the planet to Mercury. That's what it's called today by both astronomers and by Casey. Casey assigns a traditional interpretation to this planet. It symbolizes the tendency to engage life through the intellect. The psychology of Carl Jung would call such a person a thinking type. Thinking types tend to analyze life experiences by looking for reason and logic. Star Trek hero Mr. Spock might be considered the ultimate thinking type. He bases his decisions on what is logical. The following sentence, taken from a Casey reading, summarizes the dimension of Mercury very effectively. It says, quote, "Mercury enables an entity or soul in the high mental capacities," unquote. Mercury symbolizes a highly developed intellect. However, a strong mind doesn't always lead to wisdom. Too much cleverness can sometimes leave us in a tangled web. In 1940, a man in his mid-30s was told in a reading that he had entered the earth from a Mercurian sojourn. It went on to describe him as one who thought of himself clever enough to get by without making the mistakes that others so often do. But he was warned that this very gift could bring the dregs of regret, mental anguish, and fear of spiritual awakening. The man used his exceptional mind in a selfish, prideful way. These negative conditions would result. To another individual, however, Casey used Mercury to describe her interest in deep and profound wisdom. Quote, "In the Mercurian forces does the entity find the wisdom of the sage, the seer, as a portion of the experience of self," unquote. But even this woman was encouraged to give credit where credit was due. She needed to guard against an attitude of superiority. It seems that there is a standing danger that accompanies a highly developed mind. That danger is the risk of pride or self-importance. But when that test is overcome, the Mercury function becomes a tremendous tool for creative living. The second planet from the sun is today called Venus. This beautiful planet is the third brightest object in the sky and has most often been associated with one version or another of the goddess of love. The planet and its related deity has always represented the power of love and attraction, particularly at the physical level. However, even on the physical plane, the dimension of love is a wide one. It extends from the compulsion of purely physical appetites to the appreciation of great art. These two extremes, and all the shades in between, comprise the powerful force attributed to Venus. As one woman was told in her life reading from Casey, quote, "In Venus we find the inclinations towards that of the beautiful, the loving," unquote. This woman manifested Venus through an intuitive and sympathetic nature. She looked for and found the beauty, both in her physical surroundings and in the activities of other people. Generally, the Casey readings describe Venusian traits as love of beauty, love of nature, artistic talent, friendliness, and charm. Traditional astrology labels Venus a benefic, which means simply that most people would be glad to see more influence of Venus in their lives. And yet Venus can also have a downside. For the woman just mentioned, Casey gave this warning, quote, "Yet there is the inclination to rely upon others for the help and aid, which becomes a weakening influence," unquote. Venus is the force of attraction and relationship. Those with a highly developed Venus function are very good at relating to others. But that very gift can become a stumbling block if it prevents you from learning to stand on your own two feet. Relationships can become dependencies. This is one danger that dwells in the dimension of love. Another danger is pride. The Venus influence often manifests as physical beauty, and with it comes the power of attraction. You might call this power charisma or magnetism. Those who have this gift must learn to apply it responsibly. Casey said to one man, quote, "In Venus, we will find a great deal of adoration and love that will gradually be brought about the entity," unquote. The reading went on to warn him that he mustn't think too highly of himself. Quote, "Remain humble if you would materially, mentally, or spiritually succeed. Keep humble," unquote. The highest dimension of Venus is a compassionate and sympathetic heart. Certainly, love can be selfish. We can love physical appetites as well as personal power. But pure love is selfless. Ultimately, Venus can awaken us to the joy of giving as well as the joy of living. In our solar system, after Venus comes Earth. However, in our sky, the next planet we see is Mars. Mars is easily seen on a clear night. Even its red color is distinctive, making it easy to pick out among the other stars and planets. Perhaps because of its red hue, it has always been associated with aggression and assertiveness. The Greeks associated it with their god Ares, the bullying god of war. The Greeks had an ambivalent attitude toward Ares, but the Romans renamed him Mars and placed him at the center of their culture. The god of war lives on in our culture today. Such movie characters as Rambo and Dirty Harry are modern incarnations of Mars. Even the name is still used when we speak of the martial arts. The Casey readings follow the traditional interpretations of this planet. Mars symbolizes the energy of assertiveness, aggression, and anger. It's important to remember that each planet represents a necessary aspect of human experience, and assertiveness and even anger are not bad in themselves. Mars represents a certain kind of energy. How you use it determines whether it's creative or destructive. Mars also expresses initiative and spiritedness. It describes that part of us that loves victory, loves struggle and challenge. If that energy is directed toward the gratification of selfish desires, then it is incredibly destructive. However, if it is harnessed and directed by high spiritual ideals, it becomes a powerful tool in improving the quality of life. Many of Casey's readings warn people about a possible difficulty with this Martian energy. It can manifest as stubbornness, holding a grudge, and meddling in others' lives. To some people, Mars expresses fear, restlessness, or even hatred. However, Mars also has a positive expression. To a 39-year-old woman, Casey said Mars gave her a good temper as opposed to a bad temper. He commented that a person without any temper is in bad shape, while those who can't control their tempers are even worse off. The woman, then, was one who could hold her temper and use it constructively. She was told that in an earlier life, she had been a Mohammedan woman during the Crusades. Marrying a French crusader, she returned with him to France. This experience, although difficult, had taught her to stand up for herself, while at the same time adapting to new situations. A 19-year-old youth was told that his Martian energy could express itself as anger, but also as inventiveness and daring. His reading turned up an interesting past life. He was told that he'd been Leif Erikson, the Viking who led expeditions to the New World hundreds of years before Columbus. That life experience had built many positive lessons in the dimension of Mars. The reading said flatly that he would carry forward these lessons through an interest in flying. Curiously, that same young man became an aviator and served throughout World War II as a flight engineer on a B-24. Moving out from Mars, we meet up with Jupiter, the largest planet in our solar system. Traditional astrology labels Jupiter as the greater benefic, meaning that, even more so than Venus, the energies of Jupiter usually manifest in very pleasant ways. The ancient Greeks associated this planet with their god Zeus, chief of all the gods and goddesses of Mount Olympus. He was depicted as a robust, mature man with a flowing beard. In Greek mythology, Zeus was the child of Cronus. We'll meet Cronus again when we examine the next planet, Saturn, which was his Latin name. Cronus lived in fear of a prophecy that he would be defeated by an offspring. Therefore, he was in the habit of eating all his children. Zeus, however, was hidden by his mother until he grew to maturity and fulfilled the prophecy. For this reason, Zeus is the bringer of justice and order. He is the god of victory and expansion. The Romans changed his name to Jupiter, but kept his role and authority essentially the same. Traditional astrology associates Jupiter with an interest in higher knowledge, languages, and philosophy. It also indicates broad vision, wide social contact, and plenty of material resources. All in all, Jupiter signifies social power and the wisdom to use it creatively. The ennobling dimension of Jupiter can indeed lead you to a position of leadership among your fellow human beings. The Casey readings ascribe these same qualities to the dimension of Jupiter. One young boy of 14 was told in a reading, quote, "From Jupiter, the abilities are in a pleasing personality, as in relationships to groups, individuals, or in associations with large bodies of people," unquote. It went on to say that through the influence of Jupiter, this boy was a quiet leader who would best serve as an instructor or executive. It predicted that he would find his way into a line of work concerned with physical healing. The boy grew up to become an executive for a major pharmaceutical company. In 1960, one of his relatives commented of this man, quote, "He is the same jolly, rotund boy of his youth," unquote. Besides leadership qualities, the readings describe the Jupiter influence with words like ennobling, broad vision, strength, and universal consciousness. However, even Jupiter can become a stumbling block if its qualities are misused. One man in his mid-20s was told that because of his development in Jupiter, he was very idealistic and interested in seeking a wide variety of knowledge. And yet, he was warned that unless he balanced his intellectual talents with physical activity, he might become, as Casey said, a ne'er-do-well. In other words, he ran the risk of living in a dream world while never actually doing anything. Very little is known about this man since his reading in 1934. He never responded to any of the follow-up questionnaires, which in itself may tell a story. Another danger inherent in Jupiter is the temptation to build air castles. In other words, you may feel called to do some great thing which makes your daily routine seem boring and unfulfilling. In her request for a reading, one woman wrote to Casey that she was unhappy being a housewife. She felt restless in her station and wanted to grasp something bigger. She hoped the reading would help her find that something. And when the reading was given, she was described as having an adverse condition in Jupiter. In answer to her question about her soul's purpose, Casey said, quote, "Find the glory of work in the home," unquote. The next planet out from Jupiter, and the last planet that was known to the ancient world, is Saturn, possibly because it was the slowest moving of all the visible planets and the dimmest. Saturn has always symbolized the limitations of human experience. In ancient Greece, the planet was associated with the god Cronus. Cronus, you'll remember, was the father of Zeus, as well as all the Olympian gods. He himself was of an earlier race of gods called Titans. He feared the prophecy that he would be defeated by one of his own children, and therefore ate them. The Romans changed the god's name to Saturn, but kept the basic story intact. Saturn, then, in one sense, represents an archetypal character, the tyrant, the despot in power who represses the force of growth and change. Yet, as in the myth, change comes anyway. If it's been repressed, it may arrive suddenly with convulsive, eruptive intensity. Therefore, Saturn can be seen as representing two things, limitation as well as change. Ultimately, Saturn symbolizes death, the final and inevitable limitation of all human effort. But death is also the ultimate threshold of change. With every tick of the clock, the present moment dies into the past, and the future is born into the present. Therefore, Saturn also symbolizes the march of time, which carries us inexorably into new beginnings. Words like chronology and chronicle, which deal with the timing of events, derive from Cronus, the god we call Saturn. So Saturn represents both resistance to change and the inevitability of change. This is a dimension of life with which we are all very familiar. There is a part in all of us that likes things to stay the way they are. Growth and change are uncomfortable, and yet there's no stopping change. As the saying goes, change is the only constant in life. The Casey readings identify Saturn as precisely this dimension of experience, sudden change. For example, one woman was warned that she would have to deal with these kinds of experiences symbolized by Saturn. Quote, "In Saturn, we find the sudden or violent changes, those influences and environs that do not grow, as it were, but are sudden by that of change of circumstance." Unquote. Another way we might experience Saturn is in the change that comes from starting over. When we experience major limitations such as failure or breakdown, there's often not much else to do but start over. In this way, Saturn represents something very important and beneficial, the opportunity to try again. The life cycle itself is one of change, death, and rebirth, the passing of the old and the welcoming of the new. Remember, Casey's approach to astrology is within the context of reincarnation and spiritual development. As souls, we are involved in a learning process. Learning includes making mistakes, trial, and error. The experiences of Saturn, from this perspective, are a loving gift. They teach us what doesn't work. At the same time, Saturn continually offers us new opportunities. Fundamentally, then, Saturn represents the consequences of rigidity against the constant flow of change. The more rigid we are in our thoughts or attitudes, the more we will experience the dimension of Saturn, the breaking up of things that give us a false sense of security. Therefore, the dimension of Saturn is often experienced as rather unpleasant. It's not easy to let go of our security blankets, be they physical, mental, or emotional. And yet Saturn is a blessing. Through it, we develop the virtues of patience, perseverance, and adaptability. We learn from our mistakes and are given the chance to start over. After Saturn, there are three remaining planets in our solar system: Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. However, while they all carry Greco-Roman names, they were not known to the ancient astronomers. Uranus was discovered in 1781, Neptune in 1846, and Pluto in 1930. Therefore, the dimension of consciousness that each represents isn't really connected to its classical name, although some associations are possible. Interestingly, however, the planets do seem to represent major psychological trends going on in the world at the time of their discovery. Uranus, according to traditional astrology, represents scientific genius, original thinking, bold individualism. It was discovered during the age of the great political revolutions of America and France. This was also the time when major scientific discoveries were being made, such as Ben Franklin's famous kite experiment with electricity. Neptune traditionally symbolizes mystical insight and artistic inspiration. Neptune has to do with mysterious, unseen spiritual forces. It was discovered as the predecessors of Sigmund Freud were beginning to pry open the secret recesses of the human unconscious. And Pluto, newest addition to the cast of astrological symbols, is said to represent massive transformations, eruptions from the unconscious, and primitive, passionate feelings. It was discovered just before Hitler's rise to power, himself symbolizing the most devastating chapter of war and crime the world has yet known. The Casey readings are somewhat in line with the contemporary symbolic descriptions of these planets, but for the most part, the readings bring their own unique perspective to them. Often they apply one or two key descriptive words to a planet in order to clarify exactly how we might experience it. For Uranus, the key word is extreme. Therefore, one person was told, quote, "In Uranus, we will find the extremes indicated, even in the temperaments of a very demure, meek entity, and then one almost wild at times in its determination for its own way," unquote. Therefore, Uranus seems to be a dimension of intensity, which may manifest as an extreme of any kind. One person was warned about developing immoderate eating habits. Another learned that he might experience wide swings of emotions. Casey himself was told in a reading that he'd been born into the earth from the dimension of Uranus. Therefore, he had to choose between extremes. There was no middle ground for Edgar Casey in his personal life. As his reading said, he would either be, quote, "very good or very bad, very religious or very wicked, very rich or always losing, very much in love or hate, very much given to good works or always doing wrong, governed entirely by the will of the body," unquote. Uranus also has a psychic dimension. All of the outer three planets seem to relate in some way to deeper levels of consciousness. In Casey's own readings, the planets Uranus and Neptune were identified as the sources of his psychic ability. Others were also told that because of their developments in Uranus, they possessed interests and abilities in psychic perception. One woman was told that because of her Uranian development, she would have intuitions and even visions and premonitions about her own life as well as others. She was warned, however, to anchor these abilities in prayerful spiritual meditation. She was expressly told, quote, "Do not have such as formulas or mystic words or mystic circles for such development," unquote. Apparently, the woman was in danger of falling into extremely self-serving practices of the occult. Clearly, the misuse of Uranian abilities has to do with going to extremes in the wrong direction. In general, the challenge for Uranian individuals is balance. A typical Uranian type may appear to the world as kind of a mad genius who has to manage the extraordinary energy coursing through the mind. The next planet is Neptune. Whereas Uranus is associated with psychic forces, the readings say Neptune is the dimension of the mystic influences. Now, the words psychic and mystic may seem very similar, and indeed, the two planets are often mentioned together. Both planets are involved with mysterious forces, the power of symbols and spiritual sensitivity. But there is a qualitative difference between these two planets. Uranus has a fiery character. It's high-strung. It expresses itself as extremes of temperament, a highly sensitive nervous system, and a well-developed ego. Carl Jung would probably have identified Uranian people as intuitive thinking types. Neptunian people, on the other hand, might have been considered intuitive feeling types. Neptune seems to bring a heightened sensitivity to one's feelings. The key word in the readings for Neptune is water. While Uranus is a fiery, aggressive force, Neptune is watery and receptive. In fact, many people who had highly developed Neptune functions were advised to actually live near large bodies of water. Such an environment was said to help these individuals stay spiritually and emotionally healthy. It's interesting to note that the planet is named after the Roman god of oceans. So even though the planet was only discovered in the last century, it seems to be named appropriately. Water, then, is a meaningful symbol for the way we might experience Neptune. For example, as water assumes the shape of its container, Neptunian people tend to pick up the energies of their environment. There is also a devotional quality to the dimension of Neptune. One man was told that through Neptune's influence, he would not only love all things mysterious, but would also have a tendency toward hero worship. Most of us have had the experience of admiring someone to such a degree that we almost want to become that person. That's the devotional quality of Neptune. If anchored in a high spiritual ideal, this quality can lead to profound spiritual wisdom. On the other hand, if we're not careful, we can just as easily become devoted to destructive illusions. Neptune represents an interest in the mysterious hidden layers of the mind. A Neptunian personality, then, must guard against the temptation to find shortcuts to altered states of consciousness. Drugs, alcohol, and cults are all dangerous to a prominent Neptune function. One woman was warned in a reading to establish her Neptunian development in spiritual ideals, because people who don't often wind up following strange paths. And as this reading cautioned, quote, "They that seek strange gods, strange forces, do so oft to their own undoing," unquote. Another woman was told that through the Neptune influence, she would have to deal with, quote, "appetites, or those things that become as the habits of the body-mind," unquote. Traditional astrology also identifies this same aspect of Neptune. It seems that this dimension of mind is very malleable. Through Neptune, the mind receives impressions and adjusts to them. It's important, then, for the Neptunian mind to focus on positive thoughts and high ideals. It's also important to maintain a healthy environment. The Neptune function acts almost as a sponge, allowing the mind to absorb its environment into itself. On the positive side, Neptune's sensitivity can lead to some fine artistic abilities. Music, painting, acting, and many other art forms are listed in connection with this highly aesthetic dimension. As just one example, a person was told in her Casey reading, quote, "From Neptune we find the artistic urge of the entity. These, then, find their greater expression near bodies of water," unquote. The final planet in our solar system is Pluto. Its discovery was anticipated by astronomers because they observed irregularities in Neptune's orbit. However, it was actually located only in 1930. The date is interesting in relation to Edgar Cayce because he began giving astrological information in his readings a full 7 years before that in 1923. During those 7 years, Cayce's readings made reference to two planets unknown to astronomers. In the first several months after Cayce began giving life readings, he mentioned a planet called Septimus. The word Septimus obviously refers to the number seven, and Pluto is the seventh planet if you count outward from the Sun, starting with Earth as number one. However, the references in the readings to this planet are very few, and by 1925, a new planet named Vulcan seems to have replaced it. Vulcan continued in the vocabulary through 1930 and then disappeared. In 1936, a man asked in a reading about Vulcan and was told that it and Pluto were the same. No one apparently asked about Septimus, which has remained an enigma. However, circumstantial evidence seems strong enough to consider Septimus as just an early name for Pluto. Because Pluto is such a recent addition to astrology, its symbolism is still being worked out, but a few points seem to be clear. Along with Uranus and Neptune, Pluto seems to be related to forces deep within the unconscious. It appears to resemble Mars in character, but with an added intensity and even savagery. Again, part of its symbolism is derived from the events of history which were unfolding when it was discovered. Therefore, with the erupting madness of National Socialism in Germany and the carnage of World War II, Pluto is seen as representing a convulsive form of transformation. Septimus, Vulcan, and Pluto all carry comparable symbolism in the Cayce readings. Virtually every reference describes an adverse condition of some kind. They also imply a materialistic focus. Yet, as with Saturn, these difficult experiences can teach us valuable lessons along our spiritual journey. One reading, this one referring to Vulcan, sums up the influences rather well. Quote, "These make for that influence as has been of sudden changes in the social affairs, kinship, physical or business relations. Yet these adversities may be used or applied in the experience of the entity as stepping stones for soul's development," unquote. Another reading on Vulcan defines it in vivid, explosive imagery. Quote, "Beware of fire, and especially of firearms or explosives," unquote. In a later reading, a reference to Pluto describes how this planet can symbolize a materialistic ego consciousness. It says, quote, self-centeredness in Pluto and earthward in the application of self, unquote. And in 1939, a woman asked specifically about the meaning of Pluto. The reading described it as a new awakening in the human consciousness, and went on to say that though it was just emerging out of material awareness, within 200 years it would become a major influence for positive growth. It concluded by saying that Pluto is, quote, a developing influence and not one already established, unquote. So here you have a synopsis of the symbolic meanings of each planet according to the Casey readings. Remember that the planets represent actual dimensions of consciousness, all of which are important and necessary. You can think of each as a note on the scale or a color in the spectrum. All are equal in the big picture. Even Saturn and Pluto, which may bring uncomfortable experiences, are helpful in the lessons they provide. The insights you gain through astrological study can be of significant help. Through astrology, you can better understand yourself and your relationships. You may get a handle on the challenges that you're to meet in this life. You might even get a clearer idea of the kind of work you're most suited to do. In one reading, a man was told that if a scientific study were made of astrological charts, 80% of the individuals involved would show a correlation between astrology and their vocational aptitudes. But remember, astrology is not the last word on anything that has to do with you and your destiny. As this Casey reading gently reminds us, quote, astrology is a fact in most instances, but astrological aspects are but signs, symbols. No influence is of greater value or of greater help than the will of an individual. For life and its expression are one. Each soul will and does return, or cycle, as does nature. Life is continuous. These words of Edgar Casey were given on a summer afternoon in 1935 as he lay on a couch in his Virginia home. Casey was in a deeply entranced state that looked much like sleep, yet he spoke with the profound wisdom that characterized all his psychic readings. The words were directed to a young singer living in New York who could not be present with him in Virginia Beach that afternoon. But much of what was said can be useful to anyone who will study the transcript of that reading. It describes a theory of life called reincarnation, and it shows how this idea can help us all find more productive lives. The theory of reincarnation may be familiar to you, or like the young woman from New York, the Edgar Casey readings may be your introduction to the idea. In many ways, this 29-year-old woman was much like hundreds of other people who had received readings from Casey about reincarnation and past lives. She wasn't really looking for facts about her distant past. She was searching for help with problems in her current life. She wanted to be happy and fulfilled in all that she was doing. The reading began with advice to her about the purpose of life. No one, not this woman living more than 50 years ago, nor anyone today, can understand the purpose of an individual life without first seeing the greater purpose that we all share.